Altered Hollywood for smart people for Monday, July 23rd, 2018. I'm Nico, I'm your host. Talking movies, television, music, so much more in a way that smart people can enjoy it. No video today. Why? Because I said so, that's why. You think I have time? Think I have time for video? And I'm not talking about the editing and the technical direction that goes into making an hour-long video for YouTube. No, I mean, like, I gotta put my face on too, man. You want a self-respecting internet gentleman to just hop on a webcam without dolling himself up first? Come on, man. I don't have a makeup department. This is all me, baby. This face is mine and mine alone. No, I'm working on the studio in here, all right? Don't worry about it. Pretty soon, we'll be back to full form. We are currently under construction. Big aesthetic changes happening on Cultured. Pretty soon, this, I mean, mild office, I mean, just humble, mild office will soon be transformed into an internet video hub. We're going to go full-on television studio in this room. It's going to look fantastic, but you're going to have to wait a little while to see the fruits of my labor. Next week, I promise, we'll be back to video. For now, we're just doing audio. It's Cultured. How are you? Glad you're here. All the pleasantries are out of the way. Now, let's get started with this James Gunn story. My God, have I been dying to talk about this James Gunn story. If you've been living under a rock, or you're not into popular culture the way that I am, and if you aren't, and I don't know why the hell you're listening to this right now, you will understand that James Gunn, the director of Guardians of the Galaxy Volumes 1 and 2, has been fired from the Disney Corporation, will no longer be lending his talents to Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3. In the midst of offensive tweets that resurfaced over the weekend. James Gunn, of course, a provocative filmmaker, has made a number of edgy, what I think you would call B movies. Before he found himself immersed in the child entertainment world of Disney, made a number of offensive, outlandish jokes on social media. Those jokes prompted Disney to swiftly fire James Gunn over the weekend, and those jokes include, and I'm just going to name a few here, quote, "For the record, I'm against rape and baby eating in real life, parenthesis, unless you're really, really, really hungry. Just made a joke about ass raping my friend when she was asleep." That's another quote. "I burnt my tongue on an enchilada, fucking Mexicans." That's another quote. "New poll, 9/11 jokes, always in poor taste or sometimes funny?" Question. Additional question, more or less offensive than Holocaust jokes. Quote, "Laughter is the best medicine. That's why I laugh at people with AIDS." You get the gist. And these are, by the way, among the more tame of James Gunn's quotes. There's a lot of pedophilic stuff going on here. A lot of jokes made at expense of children. I've been dying to talk about this story this week because, as is the case with most news stories in 2018, there are a trillion different ways to discuss it. And depending on what news outlet you consume or what blog you read or what newspaper you subscribe to, you are perhaps getting one of three or four or five or six different narratives. And so what I want to do is focus in on three of those narratives today and really break down which is the most valid, which deserves the most examination, and which is another consequence of the media complex, the polarized media complex. Okay, because depending on what side of the aisle you're on, depending on what your agenda is, you're trying to make this story something that it's not. And so I'm going to talk through it and tell you definitively, because of course my opinion is always right, what side should you be on and what is the correct way to discuss this James Gunn story. So if you are not familiar with how this controversy came about, let me fill you in the best way that I can. So there's this guy that if you're a conservative on the internet, you'll know very well. And if you are a liberal on the internet, you might also know very well, but for a different reason. His name is Ben Shapiro. Ben Shapiro is perhaps one of the three or four most important conservative voices in all of media, not just on the internet, on television, in print, what have you. Ben Shapiro this week found himself on the receiving end of a compliment by the actor, writer, and director Mark Duplass, one of the Duplass brothers, a shining voice on the home box office network, otherwise known as HBO, independent filmmaker, actor in his own right. He tweeted something this week that said, quote, "Fellow liberals, if you are interested at all in, quote, crossing the aisle, please consider..." Oh, wait a minute. What happened here? Oops. My page refreshed on me. Yes, if you're interested in crossing the aisle, you should consider following at Ben Shapiro. I don't agree with him on much, but he's a genuine person who once helped me for no other reason than to be nice. He doesn't bend the truth. His intentions are good. Mark Duplass tweeted this. It seemed like a fairly unassuming tweet. I thought it was quite nice and lovely and as a matter of fact, a shining example of bipartisanship and human decency. But as Twitter does, the outrage mob decides to come out of the woodwork and slam Mark Duplass for aligning himself with a racist and a Nazi and an evil conservative, homophobic, Islamophobic, transphobic human being such as Ben Shapiro. This was its own controversy last week that has sort of been forgotten because the James Gunn thing blew up. But what ended up happening was Mark Duplass removed that initial tweet and then wrote another paragraph long apology to all of his fans, saying that he apologized for endorsing this person. He says that it's important to communicate with one another, but he perhaps crossed a line and he will continue to try to learn from the angry trolls of the internet. He didn't say it that way. That's my own editorial agenda there. Now, this is where it gets interesting. Because one person that decides to poke his head into this controversy is the one and only James Gunn, who tweets a long thread of about four or five tweets essentially saying, look, people, I get that you're angry at Mark Duplass, but there are a lot of fucked up people out there, including some dude in the White House that's doing a lot of fucked up shit. And perhaps if you channeled all your internet rage in that direction, we can all cut Mark Duplass a little bit of slack. The direct quote is, quote, Mark Duplass tweeting how you should follow an asshole because he thinks it's the kind thing to do simply can't be the bar for moral outrage. Have a good day. End quote. Ben Shapiro then chimes in and throws some shade in James Gunn's direction, saying, quote, I appreciate the sentiment at James Gunn, even if you're as wrong about me as you were in your directorial decisions in Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2. Winky face emoticon. An incorrect opinion, Ben, but I see where you're going there. James then responds, I've made many mistakes both on film and off. At Ben Shapiro, as for the asshole thing, I really don't know who you are other than the guy who once made fun of a high schooler for using incorrect grammar in a tweet where you yourself used incorrect grammar. So, you know, asshole. I'm assuming this was a reference to the Florida debacle. I think this was probably the Florida gun control advocates. I don't know if that tweet was specifically about Emma Gonzalez or one of the other guys, but I would assume that's what that was in reference to. So here's James Gunn referencing an old tweet from Ben Shapiro, and this is nothing new. A bunch of people that don't like Ben Shapiro have often referenced old tweets that they perceive to be racist or xenophobic in nature. So what does the internet do? Well, The internet does what it always does. Over fucking reacts. And takes this little squabble and blows it up to epic proportions. Before you know it, there are a number of conservative tweeters digging up old James Gunn tweets. And these tweets end up being compiled by the Daily Caller, the conservative blog run by, you guessed it, Ben Shapiro. So what began as a healthy show of camaraderie ended up being a massive war, Twitter war, between what is a mostly conservative base that doesn't like James Gunn and a mostly liberal base that does love James Gunn. Disney ends up seeing the tweets, they go viral, and before you know it, he's fired for them. But this began as a political act. This began as a debate about two people that had nothing to do with James Gunn. And it wasn't until he decided to kick the hornet's nest that everything went to shit. Because that's what the internet does now, on both sides. They're out for blood. They will not stop digging into your past until they've eviscerated you. So on a certain sector of the internet, this is still a political story. And it's interesting that it's a political story, even though I don't pay much mind to it. You have the left, the most vehement proponents of James Gunn, saying this is Disney taking its cues from far-right tweeters. Crazy people, conspiracy theorists, Nazis, racists, etc. And then you have people on the right saying, what goes around comes around. Like the left has used social media to shame people on the right for the better part of the last decade. This is right out of the left-wing playbook. Finding one comment that somebody made, taking it at times out of context, blowing it up, and coming for their jobs. This idea that we can legislate and regulate morality in the form of boycotts and public shaming. Justice through the mob. People on the right are saying, wow, the left finally got what was coming to them. They created this monster, and now someone like James Gunn, who is clearly left of center, he's paying the price for it. I think both sides are being a little childish here. I think both sides are sort of losing the point. They're sort of losing sight of the bigger picture. And until they realize that this chicanery is bad for both of them, it's only going to get worse from here on out. So let's disregard the political narrative for a second here. Narrative number two. It's a comedian getting punished for comedy yet again. A lot of people on the left and the right, and I consider myself one of these people, were outraged that yet another comedian was getting punished for doing their jobs. We talked about this with Michelle Wolf a couple weeks ago. We talked about this with the Simpsons guys. The Roseanne controversy, we sort of hinted at this a little bit. But, yo, James Gunn has had those tweets out there for years. If Disney did their due diligence, and I'm pretty sure they did, they would have happened upon these tweets. And this is not the first time that James Gunn has gotten in trouble for offensive language and offensive jokes. A couple years ago, there was an internet firestorm surrounding a blog post he once wrote. The guy's a provocateur. The guy is edgy. But part of that edge makes him a great filmmaker. The ability to take risks makes him a compelling artist. And it's unfair to treat comedians, to treat directors, to treat actors, to treat writers like they're politicians, like everything they're supposed to say is pristine and polished the first time. You're allowed to find bad jokes. You're allowed to make mistakes. That's why we love art. That's why we consume these guys' material. Sure, Kathy Griffin took an offensive photo with a severed Donald Trump head. Was it a great joke? No. Was it funny? No. But as Jerry Seinfeld once said about the Kathy Griffin controversy, you have to go through the bad jokes to find the good ones. And yes, James Gunn was a bit shocking and immature back in 2008, 2009. Sure, James Gunn was seeking attention, was provoking just to provoke. Said things that I'm sure he wouldn't say now. Said things that many consider to be over the line and not within the reasonable realm of discourse. And sure, that is perhaps true. But Disney knew about this. People on the internet, if they did their research, knew about this. The stuff was out there. He didn't say anything recently while under the or while representing the company that he worked for. So what the hell, man? Why we got to keep punishing comedians? This narrative is a compelling one. This narrative is worth discussion, but it's also pretty damn tired at this point. I mean, as I just mentioned, I've talked about this very topic a good 3 or 4 times in the last few months. It's nothing new. People have been dragged through the mud, fired, ridiculed for exercising their First Amendment rights for several decades at this point. I'm not a fan of it. I've never been a fan of it. I think actions should speak louder than words. I don't think that an entertainer saying something that people don't like or that people find offensive is grounds for termination unless it's hurting the bottom line. Like, unless you can, to me, prove that James Gunn's tweets would hurt the box office returns of Guardians 3, like, I see no reason why firing him would be necessary. I've always felt that way. Like, this is business. And I'm not talking about the Me Too stuff. I'm not talking about conduct. I'm not talking about sexual harassment, sexual assault. I'm talking about a public figure saying something that people don't like or saying something that people find offensive. My God, if everything that I've ever said behind closed doors became public, I would never be hired again. And there's a lot of hypocrisy involved in that. There's a lot of hypocrisy involved in terminating someone for jokes, terminating someone for saying something in bad taste, giving a wrong take. It's really hard to be an entertainer. It's really hard to be a comedian. You're going to fuck up. You're going to say things that are bad. You're going to be forced to apologize. I hate that people come for comedians' livelihoods, though. I mean, it's always bothered me. But that being said, it's always happened. This ain't nothing new. It's got to change. And people will only realize that it has to change once it affects them. You're only going to get that wake-up call when you're on the receiving end of this mob mentality. But for now, it's the world that we live in. Let's move on. Let's move on to narrative number 3. And this is the one that I think deserves to be discussed. This is the one that, to me, rang like a church bell. This one rang loud and clear to me, and it's terrifying, but it's true. Social media is changing everything. Do you remember that quote from The Social Network? When Mark Zuckerberg runs into Rooney Mara, his ex-girlfriend, at the bar, and she's recounting all the terrible things that Mark said about her on Facebook. And she says to him, "Mark, social media, Facebook, the internet, it's not written in pencil. It's written in ink. That shit doesn't go away. It's permanent. No matter how much you try to erase it, no matter what you try to delete, no matter how much you try to bury it on a search engine, no matter how much you try to cover it up, the internet's always going to be there. And that's a new phenomenon, people. It's a new phenomenon. That wasn't the case in the 60s, the 70s, the 80s, the 90s, even the early 2000s. Look back on all of the other major pop culture figures that were fired for things that they said. Charlie Sheen badmouthed the creator of Two and a Half Men in the public. Fired. Bill Maher fired from Politically Incorrect for a statement on 9/11 saying that the terrorists on 9/11 had more courage than some Americans. Fired for it. Michael Richards, star of Seinfeld, used the N-word on stage, blackballed from Hollywood. Don Imus, radio show host, sports broadcaster, 2007, called the Rutgers University women's basketball team a bunch of nappy-headed hoes. Fired for it. What do all of these controversies have in common? They happened in the moment. They happened in the moment. Someone said something that cast the company they were working for in a negative light, and they lost their jobs. Now let's look at the last few years. Paula Deen, statements resurfaced about a slave-themed wedding, and I think it was the 70s. She lost her job for it. Gilbert Gottfried tweeted a joke. Fired for it. Roseanne Barr. The ape comment about Valerie Jarrett, but if you dig a little deeper into her history, she's tweeted a number of controversial, borderline racist things. She was fired for it. Alec Baldwin. Twitter controversy. Called a New York Post photographer an F-word, slur for gay person. He lost his MSNBC talk show in 2013. See, back in the day, you could recover from stuff like that. Bill Maher got another very successful talk show on HBO. Don Imus got another radio talk show very soon after. Charlie Sheen did an FX sitcom for a few years because that stuff didn't used to stick to you. And God knows you could go back through the annals of Hollywood and dig up some very provocative, controversial things said by some of your favorite Hollywood stars because it never used to stick. Companies forgave your past transgressions. It was acceptable as long as you did your job. And the thing about the media back in the 90s or the 80s or the 70s is that you would get 15 minutes of fame or infamy, a story would run its course, and everyone would forget about it. But now, social media has no time. It exists in a different plane. What was once written remains today. Unless you delete it, unless you do a full wipe of your social media history, I can reference tweets that you made in the eighth fucking grade and use it against you as a working 25-year-old. There was a controversy recently involving an MLB player using some racial slurs on Twitter back when he was in high school. Josh Allen, drafted by the Buffalo Bills, he was immersed in a controversy using the N-word on Twitter when he was a freshman in high school. This stuff sticks to you. It's not erasable anymore. The media used to be written in pencil. Now it's written in ink. And my Lord, we have not figured out a way to deal with that yet. We have not properly adjusted. We are not equipped to scrutinize an entire person's social media history. We just don't know how to deal with it yet. God, when Facebook and Twitter and Instagram first came out, we were elated, wide-eyed. The possibilities were endless. Physical barriers finally being broken down. So long to the phone call, so long to the text message, so long to the email. Whenever you wanted to tell your buddy something, you could post it straight to their Facebook wall. Those half-assed political opinions you would normally share at the barbershop, you posted those straight to your Facebook feed for your closest 300 friends to enjoy. And those dirty jokes you would normally try out at the local pub were going straight to Twitter, 180 characters or less, for the world to see. And sure, now you regret them. Now you've thought it through. Your mind has been changed. You've grown up. You're more mature. You're more polished. You're more PC. These tweets, these Facebook posts don't reflect the you of 2018. Well, so the fuck what, man? Social media doesn't know time anymore. These things don't go away. You decided to hit the enter key, and now the world has them till the end of time. They can make rash judgments about you. They can take your words out of context. They can blow them up. You can lose your job. You can lose your livelihood. You could be branded a racist, a sexist, an idiot, because of one comment you made 10 years ago that didn't go through the filter of common sense, and that rather than being written in pencil, they were written in that dark ballpoint pen ink. It's scary, man. It's really scary. Because Lord knows I've done hundreds of podcasts in my life. I've sent thousands of tweets. I've commented on thousands of Facebook threads. If you dig hard enough, my Lord, will you find some shit? Will you find some shit from someone that, again, is not the me of 2018? I've changed. I've evolved. I've grown up. I've become better. Yet that shit will continue to haunt me. And I just hope that when it comes time to take my career seriously, perhaps I'll be put in a position of power. Perhaps I'll have a job that is under a microscope that receives a level of scrutiny that I have yet to receive in this lifetime. I just hope that by then, we've grown up as a society, we've adjusted, we've calibrated to the social media era. And by then, an offensive tweet, an ill-advised Facebook post, an embarrassing Instagram photo, that'll be the norm. That'll be the status quo. Maybe, just maybe. Maybe, just maybe. It won't kill your career. I don't know. I really think, though, that it's time to normalize this shit, because I don't think it's realistic just to, you know, delete all of our Twitter feeds, delete all of our Facebook feeds, cut off from the online world and just say hell with it all. You know, like, social media is now an irreversible part of our lives. In order to be a functioning human being in the United States, in order to have a career in media, in order to know what the hell is going on, you have to have some form of social media. And to think that this amazing tool this tool that has redefined our lives and enhanced our lives in such a meaningful way can now be the biggest weapon against us. I mean, that's the big narrative here from the James Gunn story. It's that these tweets were not sent in 2018. He didn't have a whole PR department backing him up. He didn't have the full force of the Disney Corporation on his side. He didn't have a second set of eyes reading through those tweets. He was a kid, an independent filmmaker that said some bad shit, you know, and now, you know, he went from the face of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. He was going to shepherd this whole thing from here on out. From what I understood, he was going to be a very large part of stage 4 of the MCU, whatever the hell that was. He was going to step into the Joss Whedon role, into the Russo brothers role. Perhaps he was going to direct another Avengers movie in the near distant future. And now nothingness for James Gunn. I mean, that's scary. It should scare all of us. Regardless of political affiliation, regardless of whether or not you sympathize with his plight as an artist and comedian, like, everybody can understand how terrifying the prospect of losing your livelihood can be. And you might not even be aware what your downfall will be. Like, you might not know what tweet, what social media post will be the death of you. It might have been some innocuous thing you tweeted when you were in college, and now all of a sudden, it could become the biggest story in the world. Like, Jesus Christ. Jesus. And even if you're not a public figure, like, everybody listening to this is surely not a public figure. Like, one embarrassing photo might get you fired from your accounting job. Like, it could get you fired from anything. It's scary. It really is. That shit's written in ink. And it's time to adjust to that soon. Because, Lord knows, I really don't want to lose more guys like James Gunn from Hollywood. Like, the Guardians movies are my favorite Marvel movies. Those are my two favorites. Mainly because they gave James Gunn a ton of rope. Like, Disney just sort of let him go and make the movies that he wanted to make. And by all accounts, that process was fairly painless. And he worked very well in that system. And God, I just saw Ant-Man and the Wasp. And I gotta tell you, if these Marvel movies have taught me one thing, is to embrace people like James Gunn, not try to shun them out of Hollywood. Like, man, if Peyton Reed is gonna shepherd the rest of this cinematic universe, if I gotta see more Doctor Strange movies, more Ant-Man movies, more Captain America Civil War movies, we're in a lot of trouble. Anyway, that is my take. Wow, we went long on that James Gunn story. It's the biggest story in Hollywood. What can I tell you? It's cultured. There's a lot more to get to. Some smaller stories, though, along the way. That was the real meat and potatoes of the whole thing. So we're going to come right back. All right? So stick around. It's cultured. And I love you. So this event, this topic, would have probably led off the show back in, like, 2011, but all of a sudden, Comic-Con's not a thing anymore. I'm not exactly sure what happened to Comic-Con. It was Comic-Con weekend. Like, a few years ago, it was the biggest story in all of pop culture. The panels, what happened in Hall H? New trailer debuts, new casting announcements. As the age of the nerd was growing in relevancy and power, like, I don't know, something like Comic-Con, the mecca of fandom, the mecca of nerd culture, should be the biggest story in entertainment, but it's not. It's not, man. We just don't care about Comic-Con anymore. And I suspect a lot of this has to do with the oversaturation of these types of movies. Although people are seeing superhero movies in droves, I don't think we are as excited to talk about these movies. I don't think the fandom is as rabid as it was, say, after The Dark Knight in 2008, or after the first Avengers movie in 2012. They've become TV shows. They've become staples. They've become that thing you have on in the background. There's a bunch of Marvel shows on Netflix now. We binge watch them, but we don't like binge watch them with the attentiveness of something like Breaking Bad. Like it's popcorn, it's candy. Like we don't highly anticipate a movie like Ant-Man and the Wasp, but we go to see it because we have a certain level of quality assurance. We enjoy this story. We enjoy these characters. And it's like watching 60 Minutes on a Sunday night. It's not going to change your life, but I've always watched 60 Minutes, so I'm going to keep watching it. That's what superhero movies are now. That's what these big budget franchises are now. So, like, I don't fucking care about an Aquaman trailer. Like, I'll see it, whatever. Jason Momoa is ripped. I get it, man. That dude is an Adonis. Khal Drogo's got a hell of a body. But whatever, like, I'll see the movie. I don't need to see the trailer. I'm not going to be waiting on pins and needles on my Comic-Con live stream, my 3-4 screen experience, you know? But while we're on the topic, I do want to discuss some of the trailers that came out of Comic-Con because they're interesting. And I'm interested in, like, the trailers that spoke to me and the trailers that didn't speak to me. And I wonder if this is indicative of the masses here. Like, I wonder if other people feel the same way about this. There are 5 trailers I want to discuss. I'm going to rank them from least exciting to most exciting. All right, these 5 trailers, I watched like 10 or 15 trailers that came out of Comic-Con. And I guess these are the first ones I'm going to talk about here are the ones that didn't move the needle for me at all. Okay. So the first one is The Walking Dead season 9. The Walking Dead is for, I know it's still on. Like it's crazy. It's still fucking on. Can you believe it? Yeah. You were living in some alternate dimension where The Walking Dead was canceled 4 years ago. Some Mandela effect shit. Berenstain Bear. I don't know what the hell it is. Is New Zealand north or south of Australia? That's what happened with Walking Dead, right? Like, yes, there's some of us think it's still on. Some of us think it's no longer on. Well, it's still on. And it turns out that Rick Grimes is leaving the show. Andrew Lincoln and his beloved Rick Grimes character will be written off in some way, shape, or form during the first half of season 9. This was news that broke a number of months ago. I don't fucking care, even though I still watch The Walking Dead. Like, you can put whoever the hell you want, make them fight zombies, and I'll continue to watch. Like, it is purely escapism for me. I stopped thinking about Walking Dead critically somewhere around season 5, and for me now it's just like playing with action figures. Whatever. Like, okay, Rick is no longer on the show. Good riddance. Right, so this was sort of the big news. They talked about it openly during the Walking Dead panel. Great. It would have been nice if it wasn't spoiled. Whatever. What I do find interesting about this, though, what I find interesting from a PR perspective, it seems like AMC is trying to accomplish a bit of a course correct here. Walking Dead has been declining in ratings for the better part of 3 years now. Critics don't like it anymore. Fans are a little lukewarm at this point. And they're trying to, like, inject some new blood. They're introducing some new characters. And the back half of this trailer featured those characters quite prominently. And also, Rick is leaving. They're playing up that angle. So it's like, all right, Walking Dead is doing a fresh reboot in season 9. Interesting. Whatever. I hope it works for you. My only gripe with that. My only gripe. Then why the hell is Negan still on this show? Like, why the hell are you making Jeffrey Dean Morgan hang out in an underground dungeon? Like, what the hell is happening here? Like, as if you couldn't drag out the Negan conflict enough. That was, in my opinion, one of the more tired elements of this show. It was not only a season and a half of teasing Negan, But once they brought Negan into the fold, it was a 2-season-long war between the two groups. Man, if you're not like Walking Dead nerds right now, how out of place do you feel? Like, I'm sure you're just fucking lost. Like, what are you saying, Nico? You're not even speaking English. Here's my point. Like, if you're trying to do a fresh reboot, maybe write out the character that has been the least likable and least critically acclaimed aspect of this show. And that's Jeffrey Dean Morgan's Negan character. It's tired. It's over the top. We're done with it now. Move on. Not interested in that trailer at all. Aquaman, I just discussed it. Jason Momoa, wow, what a body. Great hair, great beard. I didn't see Justice League. I ain't seeing this one. I kind of like James Wan, though. I'm not going to lie. Kind of into James Wan. Like, I'm definitely not into this movie. I want to make it very clear. I am not into this movie. I'm really not. But if we're going to make a movie about Aquaman, and by that I mean we're going to make a movie about a little boy that talks to dolphins and that lives in the lost city of Atlantis with the god of the sea. Like, if we're going to do that movie with a $300 million budget, this is what I want it to look like. I want James Wan directing. I want Jason Momoa as the lead. And I want the cheesiest underwater graphics this side of Jaws 4. Like, that's the type, or this side of Waterworld. You know, I am a sucker for cheesy looking CGI when it comes to marine biology. All right, so good on you. I mean, good luck to you, DC. You took a big swing here. Your movie looks terrible, though. Glass. Let's talk about Glass for a second. All right, let's talk Glass. M. Night Shyamalan is back. For some reason, the media and Hollywood at large seems to be all in on this M. Night Shyamalan redemption story. All of a sudden, M. Night is back. Like, the dude made one pretty good psychological thriller last year. It was called Split. Or what was it? That was that 2 years ago? Split came out. If you didn't see Split, it was a movie about a guy with split personalities. James McAvoy gave a hell of a performance, and that's like the only reason why that movie worked. It was a little ridiculous. It was a little over the top. And for me, it became like pretty indefensible when the patented M. Night Shyamalan twist hit us in the post-credit sequence, when we found out that Split was actually a surprise sequel to Unbreakable, the second or third M. Night Shyamalan film in his filmography. So now it's Glass. It's the third movie in this trilogy. James McAvoy, Bruce Willis, Sam Jackson, all reprising their characters from the Unbreakable and Split universe. This is a full-on superhero movie. Sarah Paulson's in it. She says the word superhero in this trailer. I'm a big fan of Unbreakable, but my God, that was a way different time, and it was a way different M. Night Shyamalan. All right, I think we are singing this dude's praises a little too quickly. Like, we're a little too fast to declare that this guy is back. M. Night has made, in my opinion, 3 pretty good movies. Sixth Sense, Unbreakable, Signs. All are flawed in their own ways, and all came from the late 90s and early 2000s. It has been a very long time since this dude has made anything worth seeing. And I mean anything other than complete, utter trash. And Split, to me, was a clear example of Hollywood lowering the bar so fucking low that a Smurf could clear it. And that's what happened with M. Night. It's like Split was a decent movie with a great performance and a flawed script, and now we're giving this guy the keys to the Corvette again? Like, seriously? We're just letting this dude go. We're giving him a big budget. We're giving him big stars. and we're going to see what his 2019 superhero movie looks like. I got to tell you, people are very excited about this trailer. Hard pass from me. Hard pass. This is going to end very badly for all of us. I hope you're ready for this. Like, you've let this guy back into your hearts. You've let this abusive boyfriend back into your life. You think you've changed him. You think he's changed. I'm sorry. He's going to be up to his old tricks again. I ain't fooled by this trailer, yo. I ain't fooled by Sarah Paulson. I ain't fooled by an Unbreakable sequel. I ain't taking you back. And don't get mad at me when Glass sucks. I warned you, okay? I warned you. The second most anticipated trailer from Comic-Con, or the one that got me the most excited. I'm not going to lie. I really dug that Shazam trailer. I really did. Oh, it's a silly idea for a movie. It's another DC movie. Zachary Levi's in it. The Rock was originally slated to be in this movie. He was going to play a character by the name of Black Adam. I don't know who the hell Black Adam is. People seem to be excited about it. But DC Cinematic Universe, there's this kid who finds this cape, and all of a sudden, or no, he finds this like mystical wizard. That's what it is. He stumbles upon this mystical wizard, and before you know it, when he snaps his fingers and says Shazam, he becomes Zachary Levi in an obnoxious superhero outfit with an oversized lightning bolt. This looks like the complete anti-DC movie, and I got to imagine that was purposeful. Like, this to me is a clear attempt to try to take some territory away from Marvel. To try to get on their corner. DC's here to prove that they can make a movie with some wisecracking 12-year-olds. They don't have to take themselves so seriously. They don't have to make a movie with Christ imagery. They can just make a light high school comedy with a funny leading man and low stakes. Like, I get what you're trying to do here, and I understand, conversely, the skepticism from fans. It's like, it's a little too late, man, to try to rebrand yourselves. Like, Marvel has this thing down to a science, and you're still taking high school biology class. So I understand where your skepticism is coming from. I just found that trailer very charming, though. I really did. I found that trailer charming, and I will give it a chance, even though it looks insanely ridiculous. Like, the costumes in this movie are among the worst pieces of clothing I've ever seen. Like, not just cinematic clothing. Like, I could find something at the local Salvation Army that would make for a better superhero outfit than the outfit that Zachary Levi is wearing in Shazam. But it's intentional, it's goofy, it's tongue-in-cheek. The trailer is presented as a pure comedy through and through. And I mean, I don't know. I'm into these low-stakes superhero movies, as long as it's not called Ant-Man, right? I'm into Shazam. And finally, my God, this was a weak Comic-Con. This was a really bad Comic-Con. The trailer that got me most excited was, and I'll read it for you word for word, Godzilla, King of the Monsters. Now let's forgive this terrible title for a second. Let's attempt to look past what is the corniest title I've heard since Batman v Superman Dawn of Justice. Let's look past that and strictly take a look at the trailer and this, what I find to be insanely compelling cast of characters. Godzilla, King of the Monsters, the sequel to Gareth Edwards' 2014 Godzilla movie, a movie that I found to be utterly unwatchable, is coming next year. It's directed by a guy named Michael Dougherty, who I've enjoyed some of his work. I've definitely enjoyed some of his work. He made a movie called Trick or Treat, which is a horror movie about Halloween, straight to video. It's one of we did this on Why Is This a Thing a few months ago, or a few years ago at this point. Jesus. If you go back a few years, we watched Trick or Treat for Halloween. Really like that movie. He also did Krampus, which I didn't see, but apparently that's pretty good. A good horror director and writer. He's worked on some of the better X-Men movies over the last few years as well. He's going to be directing this one. And let me just read for you this cast, okay? Again, like, I have no reason to believe this movie is going to be good. Like, I have no reason to believe, other than the fact that it just seems they're throwing everything up against the wall. It's like Mothra, he's in. Mechagodzilla, he's in. Three-headed dragon thing, he's in. Like, Godzilla King of the Monsters, they ain't lying. We're going to see all the peasants in this monster kingdom. Like, I'm really into just throwing everything up against the wall here. But I'm really into this cast. Because that is the thing about that 2014 movie. Like, Jesus, was that cast atrocious. Like, that cast was just unwatchable. Bradley Whitford, my boy. Get Out, The West Wing. Josh Lyman himself in this movie. Millie Bobby Brown, 11 from Stranger Things. She talks in this one, and she doesn't have telekinesis. She was a big part of this trailer. In on that. Vera Farmiga. Always liked her. Especially like her work in last year's The Commuter. She's in this movie. Oscar nominee Sally Hawkins, star of The Shape of Water. What the hell is she doing in this? She's in the movie. Kyle Chandler. Friday Night Lights. Coach Taylor, baby. He's in this shit. Thomas Middleditch. Love him in Silicon Valley. Can't stand him in those Sprint commercials. He's in this movie. Get this one. This one to me was the creme de la creme. Tywin Lannister himself. That's right. Sir Charles Dance. I don't think he was knighted. Maybe it's just Charles Dance. What the hell is he doing here? I need some more Tywin Lannister in my life. Ever since he got shot on the potty by his dwarf son, I've been itching. When's Dance back? When's the time to dance yet again? Oh, it's dancing time. Charles Dance in this movie. I love this cast of character actors. I mean, these guys are just pulled out of all of your favorite TV shows, and that is not lost on me. Like, this is just a showcase of your favorite television character actors. And, okay, like, I'm not really a sucker for when Godzilla blows that blue flame out of his mouth. And it just completely perpendicular to the Earth's to the ground. Like, he just goes straight up. It is straight vertical, that Godzilla flame. Which, you gotta think, like, Godzilla, who are you shooting that at? Like, that shit's gonna come down. That's how gravity works, bro. And you're gonna be right in the line of fire. I just really dug that trailer. I just liked all the familiar faces I saw. I liked seeing all those monsters. I appreciated how it was shot. I mean, if this movie can just, like, be 20% of a more compelling human drama as the original movie was, like, I'm in. Like, just sign me up. I love monster movies. I really do. I love monster movies. And so what's better than, like, watching the king of monster movies in Godzilla : King of the Monsters? Oh, Comic-Con, where have you been? Like, come on, man. Pick up your game. YouTube's kicking your ass. Like, we don't have to watch your trailers anymore. We got the internet for that. Anyway, yeah, that's my Comic-Con review. I'm going to hit a few more things just right now. Let's just get this out of the way because it's kind of a long show today. I just realized that. So Robert De Niro's going to be in this Joker movie, and it's called Joker, and it stars Joaquin Phoenix, and it's directed by Todd Phillips. Hard pass. Hard pass, bro. Good for him, I guess. Good for Bobby D. Someone's got to pay for those yachts, Bobby. Rugrats is coming back. It seems like, you know, man, my generation's so funny. It really is. Us millennials are so funny. You know, for some reason, more than any other generation, we put our cartoons on the same level as Stanley Kubrick movies. Like, we just think these things are the most important pieces of television ever created. Whether it be SpongeBob, or Fairly Odd Parents, or Jimmy Neutron, or shows like Doug, Hey Arnold, Rocco's Modern Life, and now Rugrats. Like, we just think the stories in this universe are endless, and the next generation of child must enjoy them in the way that we did. And, like, I don't remember, like, my parents ever doing this. Like, my mom loved the Flintstones. I don't remember her ever sitting me down and saying, you're gonna watch the Flintstones with me. This shit is art. You know? Like, I discovered some of those shows. Like, I watched Scooby-Doo. But I don't remember any, like, petitions for a Rocky and Bullwinkle reboot. You know? Like, I don't remember, like, anybody claiming that those cartoons were more than they were. I mean, they were silly cartoons. They've always been silly cartoons. So, like, I don't know. Like, does Rugrats need a reboot? Like, I'm happy. I'll watch it. I'll watch it. Like, cool. I'll watch the movie. Apparently, they're doing a live action movie. I'll go see that. Like, it meant a lot to me. Rugrats was one of my five favorite shows when I was seven. But it was just that. It was one of my five favorite shows when I was seven. I didn't see The Wire when I was 7 years old. I hadn't seen The Sopranos. I hadn't seen Seinfeld. It's like they're what they are. They're fun cartoons made for a certain demographic. And the key is these creators never tried making them into more than they are. And that's the thing with cartoons. They're made by people that love cartoons. They love the art form, but they don't take it seriously. You know, but that's like a new phenomenon. We're so retro obsessed now. We love the reboot culture. We love living in the past so much that we are guilty of this revisionist history. And in hindsight, we say, wow, Rugrats really had a lot to say about the Oedipus complex. Wow, had really a lot to say about divorce, had a lot to say about childhood trauma. Tommy Pickles was really a Christ figure. Chucky was like Abraham Lincoln, said so much about American exceptionalism. It's like, guys, it's a cartoon about talking babies. It's like, stop it. Every other generation understood cartoons are cartoons. But now we're so obsessed, we show our children and our younger siblings all these old clips. Why don't they get it? What is it that they don't get about Ren and Stimpy? It's like, man, kids change and kids are dumb. Like, they're into the shiny new thing. They watch Rick and Morty now. All right, enough. Rugrats was great. Sure, I loved it. Enough making it into more than it actually is, though. Happy anniversary to The Dark Knight. The Dark Knight turned 10 last week. I don't know if you're up on all the Hollywood blogs, but this was a point of contention for a lot of bloggers this past Wednesday. A lot of retrospectives written about Christopher Nolan's The Dark Knight. Which is cool. I enjoyed reading them. I did. I didn't find any of them to be particularly insightful. You know, just a lot of like, what does the Dark Knight mean in the era of Trump? What did the Dark Knight or how did it define blockbuster cinema? How did it define the millennial generation? Movies were never the same. Like, it was just a lot of that shit. And, okay, whatever. I've heard all of this before. I've thought that movie to death. It's one of my favorite movies. It's one of the transformative film-going experiences of my life. When I walked out of that movie, my relationship to the cinema was different than when I walked into it. Like, it was just one of those movies for me. I love that movie. I'm never going to apologize for loving that movie. And it's just kind of interesting to me how 10 years later, our favorite thing to do is shit on that movie. And I'm not exactly sure why. I think we blame it for the sins of its copycats a little too much. We blame it for the current DC universe. We blame it for Hollywood's obsession with dark and gritty blockbusters. Everyone's been trying to mimic Christopher Nolan since 2008, and no one's been able to do it as well as Christopher Nolan. That ain't his fault. Like, Christopher Nolan made a great superhero movie, and it's not his fault that other superhero filmmakers didn't understand what made The Dark Knight so damn compelling. And I think we also, in hindsight, hate on The Dark Knight Rises a little too much. Like, don't get me wrong, I do not like that movie. And that movie does, you know, just, and it's unavoidable. It hurts The Dark Knight's legacy. It just hurts the legacy of that trilogy. I have a very hard time separating the two. And so perhaps we look back on it with, you know, a little too much skepticism. But that movie was huge, man. It was a phenomenon. And anytime you have a phenomenon on the big screen, it's important. It's meaningful. We should talk about it. We should celebrate it. Anytime that us as a community, us as a populace, gets excited about the same piece of art, that's good for art. It's like this weekend when everybody watched Tiger Woods at the British Open. We all got together, watched golf for the first time in a couple of years. Like, that's great for the sport of golf. Consensus is great. Dominance is great. Phenomena are great. That's what The Dark Knight was. It's a meaningful movie. I wish that everybody just celebrated it more on its 10-year anniversary and didn't, like, rush to their WordPress accounts looking for the hottest of hot takes, you know? It's like everybody just settled down. You love The Dark Knight, I love The Dark Knight, and if it didn't exist, our lives would be a little worse. And that's cultured. There we go. Thank you for being here. We'll be on video very, very soon. Don't you worry. Check the YouTube channel. I don't know if there's like a convenient URL to get to the YouTube channel, but you can definitely link to it at TooManyThoughtsMedia.com or TMT.media. That is the website. That is the home base for all things Too Many Thoughts. That includes movie hopping, Why Is This a Thing, The Think Tank, The Nico Show, and now, brand spanking new to the network, 2 Cents Radio, that podcast that started it all for me, the show I do with Rob and Danny every so often, is now exclusively on TooManyThoughtsMedia.com. 3 dudes from completely different walks of life all across this great land of ours talking about whatever the fuck comes to their minds. We give our 2 cents on just about anything. Check it out. TooManyThoughtsMedia.com or TMT.media. I love you. You guys are so great. I'm so glad I'm here, and I will surely be back next week to talk about all the stuff that Hollywood doesn't focus in on enough. We're going to shine a light on the finer things of the entertainment industry. Movies, television, music. It will never be the same as cultured continues. So please, folks, come back. Come back to this very spot next week where you and I will once again get cultured. Love ya.